welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at director Albert Dupontel and his 2017 film, See You Up There. Returning on the show today to talk about See You Up There is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So this was I did like this film. It's a World War I films are kind of one of the, just like World War II films, one of those things where there's so many entries, and especially with World War I, it's usually kind of the same themes. You know, World War I was a bad war. You know, there's a lot of carnage and violence.
And loss of life.
Loss of life. You know, kind of the higher ups really were screwing up the whole thing in Europe. And, you know, this, whenever it's a World War I movie, you're always going to have a trench raid.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, once again, you're going to see the same things. But this is definitely a unique film in a genre that, once again, has been a World War I film that's been done to death so many times.
Yeah, and World War I was supposed to be the big one. Like, there was never supposed to be a World War II. It was supposed to be the war to end all wars. So, you know, whenever that comes up, too, like, this is the biggest war that will ever be.
Yeah. And just thinking of like World War I films, like even that wasn't even the most notable World War I film that came out last year. Of course, that one was Wonder Woman.
Yeah, right. Thinking. I forgot about that, actually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it also reminds me of another French film called A Very Long Engagement.
Which I believe was Albert Dupontel. He's not only the director of this film, he's also the writer and the star. I believe he was also in that movie.
I'm not sure he was in that movie, but it sure has the feel. This movie we're talking about today has that feel of a Jean-Pierre Jeunet movie. He did A Very Long Engagement.
Anomaly.
And also Amelie, yes, yeah. And Delicatessen, and all kinds of kind of weird stories about fringe characters who are nonetheless sort of appealing.
Yeah, of Jeunet's movies, I've only seen Amelie, but I guess the closest thing to compare him to an American filmer, he's like maybe a little bit of a French Tim Burton.
Yes. Yeah, there's a dark side for sure, but there's also that sense of wonder and a little bit of magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about Amelie, how charming it was with all the candy colors and the way it made Paris look so much like a postcard. And, you know, the love story and the, you know, just the fanciful things like the pig lamp, you know, turning itself off.
Yeah, even a bit of like maybe like a comparison, like a combining Wes Anderson and Tim Burton is maybe even a better way to describe him.
Well, now Wes Anderson's out of my wheelhouse and squarely in yours.
Yeah. Well, he's not even in my wheelhouse. I've only seen one movie of his, but, you know, he's always kind of has those elaborate production designs, very quirky characters. You know.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
That, and it sort of also reminds me very much Tim Burton of like Edward Scissorhands.
Good point. One of the things that really stood out, it's one of the first shots you see of this movie is, like we were talking about earlier on, I'm pretty sure like that it's a really impressive shot when you're following the dog that's going along the battlefields and the trench in no man's land. And it keeps following him, and it's an unbroken shot. It goes on for like a minute or so. And it's like, it's not just like in one specific direction, like, you know, this way or that way. He's going, you know, left, right, up, to the right, to the left, backwards again, and I was extremely impressed. It must be a drone shot, because that's
the only way
I think you could pull that off, because a crane shot cannot have that much mobility.
Right. It'd be that agile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was another shot like that, too, that I was really impressed by, because, you know, one of the standard things people do is the old hole in the ceiling trick.
Yeah.
You know, and you're peeking through the ceiling. It's something you're either eavesdropping, or it's a way to frame a shot where somebody's sort of on the outside but looking in. And they do that, but they fly into it in such a cool way. It's like first you see the hole, and then you're going through the hole, and then you're in the crowd. But the whole time you're seeing what you're sort of sinking into. Really cool shot.
Yeah, and even the other one, when we first were following the little girl as they go up into the place where the two guys live. Now, should we follow her going from this place into that place?
Yes.
And once again, it's completely mobile. She's like going in all different directions.
That could be a handy cam.
Steadicam. Yeah, I was really impressed, and you know that shows what you know. I don't know for 100% sure, but I'm going to assume that shot in the trench is a drone shot, because I think that's the only way that could have been pulled off. Maybe it was done with like, you know, computers. You know, it was done later on, maybe, but I'll just say it was a drone shot. That shows how like cool you can the cool things you can do with new technology when it's done in the right hands.
Yeah, and it's not overdone. It's not look at me, it's like, wow, that was cool. Yeah. And then you're back in the story.
Yeah, like that's a great point you said. It's not look at me, like, you know, Alfonso Cuarón where, you know, you watch Children of Men or even Gravity where he'll have long takes that just go on for like 10, 15 minutes. Or even his friend, Iñárritu, when he does Birdman or The Revenant, right. Where that's just kind of like, look at me, look at me. Did you notice that I did not put any cuts? Do you notice that this is a long take?
Uh-huh, yeah. Right. Very show-offy.
Yeah.
And there's lots of very show-offy things in it, but it's very restrained, and it all kind of, I think, works with this idea that this is kind of a fairy tale. So when you get mm-hmm. to the character who understands the man who can't speak, you don't even question it. The young girl, who I think of as the Kirsten Dunst character. Because she very much has that kind of persona, plucky, street urchin kind of a thing. But you don't even question it because it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And it's very similar. This is not in a bad way, but it's a mishmash of kind of a different lot of films. And I'm not saying, oh, this is like a ripoff of this, this is a ripoff of that. He's not like, it just influences, I would say, like, one of the things when I see him like going through all the graveyards, especially in the beginning when he's planning the dog tags so they can, you mm-hmm. know, make believe that he's dead.
Beautifully lit, by the way.
Oh, yeah,
he's
everything
creeping through the dark and he's got this lantern and the light's perfect on the lantern. That alone was like, wow, look at the way they shot that.
Yeah, everything in this movie I think is production design. Like we talked already about the mobile camera movement. Everything on the technical level, I would say in this film, you'd be hard to do it any better.
Right, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but anyway, when I was talking about the graveyard, every time I see somebody kind of, you know, running around through a graveyard, looking this and looking that, I can't help but think of the ending of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which yes. is one of my all-time favorite movies. So you got a little bit of that. Even when another movie I can't help but think of when I think of like trench warfare, people getting ready for the trench, following people through the trenches, Paths of Glory, Stanley Kubrick,
mm-hmm.
and another film that. Reminds me a lot. We talked about this film not too long ago, was Eyes Without a Face,
yep.
a French film about somebody who's disfigured. People believe they're dead, but they're really not. They wear a mask. And once again, that's one of my all-time favorite films. So a lot of, like I said, there was a lot of, I noticed this, I noticed that, but it's never like ripping it off. It's just, oh, you can see where he got, you know, a little bit of influence from that, a little bit of influence from that.
Or maybe even an homage of sorts, but not really heavy-handed.
No, not at all.
Yeah, not at all. And in fact, I thought about Eyes Without a Face, too, because, you know, you introduced me to that film.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has that feel to it of the, it's not just that his face is damaged, he's just shattered inside.
Yeah. Good
and,
point.
You know, it could almost be the same guy. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's the same sort of person.
Yeah, and even like in Eyes Without a Face, where the one person like does all these terrible things just to make sure they get a new face, just so they can survive. This guy's doing all these things, you know, to make sure that he's able to feed the guy's morphine habit. He steals morphine from veterans. He steals morphine from hospitals just mm-hmm. so he can keep up, get his fix.
Yeah, then that's hard to watch too because. It makes the character not quite good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't beat up veterans to get their morphine. That's a terrible thing to mm-hmm. do.
But I will say he does get his comeuppance, though, because remember, they do find him in the streets and they all gang up on him and beat him up. So
with their crutches
yeah.
and stuff.
So he does get his justice.
He does. It also reminded me a little bit of Orson Welles in that it tries to do something different with the technology of film. You know, lots of long takes,
long takes,
kind of cool things you can do with CGI these days. But Orson Welles would have been excited about this movie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This movie came out at the, it won a whole bunch of Caesar Awards. Best Director and Best Screenplay, and it was nominated for some other things. And it was supposed to be at the French Film Festival. It wasn't supposed to be, it was. At the last French Film Festival, which I didn't get to go to. I usually go every year with a friend of mine. So we've been looking for all the movies that they had at the festival and watching them. And so when we started watching this one, it was like, oh, this looks like a pretty straight-up war movie. And she said, yeah, well, wait, it's going to get weird.
Yeah, so the Caesar Awards, I'm assuming that's like the French version of the Oscars?
Exactly.
Okay. And, you know, we talked about earlier, like, this is interesting because this is... not just the director of the movie, Dupontel, but he's one of the main star of the movie, and he also is the writer of the movie. And he is looking at more of his filmography, this is not the first time he's done that.
You know, the other movie, the only other movie I've seen him in is Irreversible, which is one of the hardest movies of all time to watch. Well,
he didn't direct it. That's Gaspar Noé.
No, he's acting in it.
He's acting in it. Okay.
But yeah, that movie's just so difficult to watch.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're like Irreversible, like, oh, right, I know that movie. I know exactly what movie.
Yeah, yeah, that's a movie you don't soon forget.
No. That's the only thing I'm familiar with him from. But I thought he was great in this.
Yeah, one of the things I was like, he's a little bit too old to be serving on the front lines. I mean, I've looked at his age. This came out last year, so let's assume a timing of filming, he was like 52. 52-year-old men aren't serving out there on the front lines. They're either like, you know, officers, generals, or they're like doing something behind the scenes, like, you know, office work.
I think we're meant to think he's one of these old, beyond his years kind of guys.
That's a good point.
But yeah, he didn't feel like a peer. He felt like a father figure.
Yeah, because one of the things that, like, he was talking to the father of this fallen soldier, and he goes, "My boy," and he's like, "My boy, you're probably the same age."
I also think this movie reminds him a little bit of Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because, like you said, not only with the face, but, you know, he feels like he's been wronged.
Yes.
And he's doing something, you know, he's trying to get his way of revenge.
Yes.
Good point.
Plus masks.
And the mask, yeah, of course. You know, and the interesting thing about the movie is there might be a little bit something to say about treatment of war veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the main thing, the reason why they want to get, you know, get revenge on all of these, like, higher up guys is they feel that the fallen, soldiers who died in battle, which is, you see the hatch, the war memorial scheme, is that they're more respected than the people who survived.
Mm-hmm.
They say, but even then, like, you see the way they treat that graveyard and how they're treating the dead bodies, so that's not even 100% true. But you're showing that, you know, once the war is over, you just kind of forget about the veterans, or they're supposed to just suck it up. You've done your duty. Now move on with your life.
Yeah, and the main character, not the guy who's wearing the masks, he even says something like that after the war, he accepted some crappy job. But after being in the war, it was like, you know, whatever. I mean, I've been through so much. Doing a menial job is not beneath me. Nothing's beneath me. I survived. But that's a whole different attitude from, well, I'm qualified to do this, and I want to get back into my career. You know, it's also people who've just been so beat down that they've resorted to stealing morphine from veterans.
Yeah, yeah. And it was really, this is based on a novel by of the same name, called the same title. It's by Pierre Lemaitre. I hope I can pronounce that right. And, like, you talk about how it's got this epic scale and the way the treatment of the war veterans. I guess the book itself was about 600 pages long. I'm wondering, did you have a chance to
read? I have not attempted that. No, that's a that's a really big commitment. That's you know, usually the book is better. But after a movie this visual, I think it would be really hard to beat the movie.
Yeah. Now, the fact that it is based on a book that is said that it's like 600 something pages, that does bring into a couple complaints I have with the movie. And the one of the thing I have is that there are too many subplots. Now, I can tell that was probably in the book. And maybe the fact that the book is 600 pages, it probably can flesh out all those relationships, and maybe they all coalesce in some way and come together. In the movie, like, this isn't like major complaint that took it away. I still enjoyed this movie. But there are definitely parts where, like, oh, that could have been better. The main part, one of the parts is the main character's relationship with the maid. Mm-hmm. He goes to the house. He sees the maid. You cannot, the minute you see each other and have that little meet cute thing, like, oh, okay, they're gonna get up together. And it never really gets her. So you see them, and then he kind of awkwardly, you know, asks her out, and then, like, a scene later, I guess they've been out together. They've been dating for a while, and then he tells her the truth, and then she seems disgusted. But then at the very last scene, we see they're back together. That didn't really have a huge effect on the whole movie. Like, you could have taken that out of the movie entirely, and it wouldn't really have changed anything. And that was one of the things, like, even another thing I think they could have taken out was the evil war officer guy who they noticed, like, you know, made that attack on the trench when there was really no need to, because the war was going to end in 2 days. There was no need to do the attack. Like, he goes off and marries
the sister.
And then we find out that he's been having constant affairs with her. That one of the women he's having an affair with, it was like his servant's, is like one of his assistant's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, he gets, you know, he goes to the sister and she says, well, you've done your duty. I'm pregnant now. Mm-hmm. And now I don't need you anymore. And I know what kind of person you are. So just get out of my life. Like, that's another part where it really didn't add that much to the story. I don't know why they had it there just to highlight more of the fact that this guy is a bad guy.
Yeah. And also to give another moment of satisfaction for people who wanted him to get his.
Yeah.
He's a deliciously evil guy.
Got the mustache, too.
Yeah, he has the mustache and everything. One thing I thought was very confusing is that the sister and the maid looked very similar.
They did look very similar.
And it took me a couple of the second time around where I really kind of understood who was who. But the first time, I kept confusing them. And I kept thinking, wait a minute, is he going after the sister?
Yeah, I was watching it. Wait, because they have the exact same hairstyle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very confusing. Oh, one thing I really did love in this is that the dad was played by Niels Aristrup, who's been in other movies that I have liked. Like, we talked about The Prophet.
Oh, that was him.
That was him.
Okay.
The Corsican.
Oh, okay. You know, yeah, I was kind of watching. Like, have I seen this guy before?
I've seen this guy, yes.
All right.
He was also in a fantastic movie called Diplomacy.
Is that another French film?
It is, and it's about World War II and the machinations behind the scenes diplomatically of not blowing up Paris when Hitler wanted them to. Really great.
Interesting.
Movie.
Definitely have to. That's another one I got to put on my long to watch list.
Yeah, that's very good. Very gripping.
Yeah, and then another problem, like you said, how you had difficult understanding. One of the other things I had difficult understanding was all the machinations of what exactly the scheme was. And there were two schemes going on at the same time, right?
Right. Well, there was one scheme where they were selling war memorials that they were just selling the idea. They were never going to produce them. They were just going to take the money and run.
Yeah, there was that. And then the evil guy, he was having some scheme with the graveyards. What was his thing? Wasn't that a scam? Because they even set the one guy who's like the hard ass on him.
I didn't know if there was a scheme there. I think he was just playing fast and loose with regulations. That's what I thought, because they were just burying people in any old grave and putting.
Yeah,
because
like they weren't
up.
Putting anybody in. They were always getting the graves wrong. Was that it?
I thought that was it. I didn't think there was any gain for him other than that.
It seemed like there was some sort of gain. I thought because like the way he pays off the guy and gives him all this money, I thought they're making some sort of money off of this deal. Was that just me? Because that's one of the things, like, wait.
You know, it's one of those threads that I didn't really pay attention to, but, you know, there may have been more to it. I may need to watch it another time.
Yeah, because that's...
It's one of those movies that has so many layers. Yeah, if you're not paying attention, you think, wait, I'll get back to that, and then you don't, and they don't.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was, because I was watching this, because the fact that, like, there was this one scheme, so that scheme with the War Memorial, they just drew some artwork, submitted it to a contest. They get paid to, like, actually do it, but they say, no, we're not going to do it, and let's just head off.
Right.
That was it?
That was it.
Okay.
I thought that was it. Okay. But there wasn't actually more to the scam, though, because the guy was working for the dad and managed to get into the bookkeeping and make people sign receipts saying that they deposited X number of dollars. When they gave him the money, he would skim off some of it.
That.
And that was a great little sequence where he kept tapping and hiding the amount and tapping and here's the pen and tapping. Very cool way to like barrel through. So this happened to a whole bunch of people. But it was done with a very rat-a-tat-tat.
And so that scam where he's, you know, scraping off the top, was that in connection to what they were doing with War Memorial? Or was that something? Okay.
That was so that he could scratch together the money to make the catalogs. And how did he get stuck with having to do all the work?
Okay.
You know, I mean, he was pretty loyal to his buddy who saved his life, and then he saves his life in a way. But boy, did he end up with the short end of the stick.
Yeah.
And he even says some sarcastic things from time to time, like, rich people always think everybody else should work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so thank you for clearing that up, because I was like, okay, so was this in connection with what they needed to do? Okay, so there was that. But I'm still, like, kind of unsure about – I still have a feeling that he would – with the graveyards, there was some other way he was making some sort of money off of that, and it was, you know, in some way illegal or fraudish.
There probably was, because he was just such a bad guy. There probably was more to it.
Okay. Because, I you know, it kind of connects even to the movie when he's, like, retelling the story at the end to the one guy, and he's, like, telling him, like, well, I did it how this, and he does it how this. And then the one guy who's, like, the, you know, the stenographer, he just kind of stops, and he goes, just say fraud. So that's just kind of how I feel. It's like, okay, like I'm like trying to figure out all the machinations.
The
I'm like, you know what? Just it's bad. It's illegal. Some sort of scheme where they make money. move on. That's what I need to do and stop focusing on it, I guess.
What did you think about him surviving because of the horse head?
So by putting your mouth on the horse, you know, so the horse's lips like that, it gives you extra oxygen?
I guess because there was maybe still some in there, or it was a way to filter out all of the grain that he was buried in. I don't know. I found that weird.
Yeah. I didn't really get that, but I'm assuming that's just something like horses, I don't know, make an animal's mouth or something.
Also, you know, of course, reminded me of The Godfather.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how do you throw a horse's head into a plot without revoking The Godfather? I wonder if there were a lot of little nods like that to famous movies.
Like we said, like, oh, that's Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. That's Eyes Without a Face. That's Past the Glory. You keep going back and back and back. But, yeah, and what was interesting about this movie, like we've talked about how you can compare it to Jean-Pierre Jeunet, or even say a bit of Tim Burton or Wes Anderson, It does feel a little bit kind of like a black comedy. That was interesting, the way it starts out, I wasn't expecting it to be funny. And that's one of the things, like, oh, is that trying to be funny? Like, is this supposed to be funny? Like, that's when I was watching that, like when we were talking a little bit about Buster Scruggs, like, wait, this isn't funny. I thought this was going to be funny. Like, I'm watching this film, I was like, wait, that's kind of funny. I thought this was supposed to be serious. That's one of those things where you keep going back and forth. Like, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to laugh at this.
Yeah, and not only funny, but witty. Mm-hmm. Like, I found some of those costumes, all of the masks, just incredibly well rendered. I want to hear what you thought about the masks. All of the masks.
Yeah, even the part where they're at the, you know, lavish 1920s-ish party. And then he's got the blackface mask on. And then, like, he's got, like, the big mass of all, like, the officials that were responsible for World War I in France. He's got, like, the Kaiser. Yeah, very, like I said, the production design, all the costume work and everything in this film, it's, like, hard to say they could have done any better.
Did you have a mask that was your favorite?
I like the one where he kind of like has the thing where he can make it go up for a smile and down for a frown.
And that was a super cool effect too, because it was so simple. But it also evoked the, the two masks for theater.
Yeah.
You know, that was very clever. I absolutely loved the last one, the blue one with the feathers.
Yeah, that was a good one. But yeah, everything, like I said, everything like on a technical level, I think about this film, like you just watch it and you're like, can't really think of anything better. So we could talk a little bit about, you said you've seen one other work by DuPontel as far as his work as a director?
No, the only movie I've seen of him is him in Irreversible.
Oh, okay. But nothing else he's directed.
No, but you know, the guy who plays the bad guy, Laurent Lafitte, he was in Elle. We talked about that briefly.
Isabelle Huppert.
And he was also in Tell No One. So he's done some other stuff. I've seen him in a couple of other things.
You know, the bad guy I was watching, like, he looks a lot like Freddie Mercury.
He did.
Like, I was watching.
You're right.
Yeah, he kind of looks a lot like Freddie Mercury.
He could have done the Freddie Mercury thing. He could have. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, because looking at him a little bit, I know there was a film he did in 1996. It was called Bernie. Apparently, it was big on the film festival. It got a lot of award recognition.
Is this the Jack Black movie?
No. This is another. This was in 96. That Bernie film came out like 5 years ago.
Okay.
But yeah, I was supposedly big on the film circuit. There's a couple other films I was looking at, I guess, kind of one of those things, big on the indie film circuit in France. But yeah, I'd be down to see. Looking at them though, they're pretty, like I said, indie films. Like, this seems like a pretty big jump where all those were like kind of slow budget independents, and here's this, you know, very lavish production design, you know, war epic.
Yeah, you know, I had no idea that Albert DuPontel had it in him. I mean, where did that come from? Unless he was borrowing from a lot of, you know, famous people like we described, Jean-Pierre Jeunet and Orson Welles and Stanley Kubrick and all of those guys.
Because I'm looking at some of the, I was like, whenever we do one of these things, I always like to look at what other people thought about the movie, you know, like what are their thoughts maybe. You know, and one of the things they talk, like a lot of people said, oh, this seems like a Jean-Pierre Jeunet film. And like, what was the one you were talking about?
Delicatessen.
Early? No. The
A Very Long Engagement.
Very Long Engagement. I believe he was, I think you said you, I think he was in that movie because I looked that up. And I think isn't that movie also about like a soldier who's presumed dead who comes back?
Yeah, it's a World War I movie. It's Jodie Foster, believe it or not. Yeah.
Yeah, so wow. So that seems like, you can tell, once again, he's not like ripping off, but I can tell getting a lot of influences here and there and picking them up and putting them in the movie.
Yeah. And I don't think that's a coincidence either, because they're French.
Mm-hmm. All right. Getting close to the end of my questions, is there anything else about See You Up There or Jean-Pierre Jeunet, Albert Dupontel that you want to bring up?
Well, you know, I saw this with my friend. We were watching, trying to catch up with what we missed from not being at the film festival. And we both were just blown away by this movie, and I immediately knew I wanted to use it in my class because it's such a great example of what you can do with film. And most people don't try that hard anymore to make something this this sumptuous. And so I showed it for Halloween. We were building up to Coco on the Day of the Dead. So, you know, I made the whole intro about movies with masks and and then led up to this. And everybody was pretty impressed in the class with the movie because this was world cinema. Because it was just such a spectacle and perfect for Halloween because, you know, taking on a different persona, sneaking around at night, lots of tricking instead of treating, you know, lots of elements that really went well with Halloween.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised. Is it when it, as far as international recognition, did this was ever talked about in America?
I don't think it was. In fact, I'm definitely thinking I'm going to use this for next year's International Film Festival because it's such a special movie. And I think if you haven't seen it, you are really missing out on something very, very cool.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it because I remember looking at Rotten Tomatoes, and compared to a lot of other foreign films, this has only got like 15 reviews overall, which, you know, once again, for a movie being, it's not a lot of reviews. And I even think I'm looking at the amount of reviews on IMDb, it's pretty low compared to a lot of other like notable foreign films.
It's an unknown gem.
Unknown gem.
What do you think of the title, though? That's the last thing I would like to
I thought it was kind of a reference just to the trenches, like See You Up There.
Okay.
Or like it might be a double meaning to like See You Up There as far as heaven.
See, I thought that too, and I also thought it had an extra meaning with the guy on the with the masks on the balcony.
Oh,
because you know everything he did was for that final confrontation with his father.
And at the end, when he finally gets the, catharsis.
Yes.
For his father, that seems like now he's good. Like he can leave the. He can now officially be dead.
Yeah. That was my take on it.
Okay. No, I definitely agree. All right. Then the last question I'll have is just tell us about your classes.
Well, we're almost at the end of fall semester here, so next spring, I will be teaching. Intro to Film, American Cinema, World Cinema, and Women in Film.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been discussing Albert Dupontel and his 2017 film, See You Up There. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Tuesday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragonninjaradio.podbean.com or the category Armchair Directors. Tune into Dragon Digital Radio to hear the show a week before it's on Podbean. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For the Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying so long, we will see you next week.